Okay, what's going on?
AudioToYou.com.
The home of quality podcasts.
Stay tuned to this channel.
Shutters Inc. with Bruce Williams and Shelton Muller.
Hi, and welcome to episode 139 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from ShuttersIncPodcast.com. And with me on the line via Skype from Melbourne once again, Mr. Shelton Muller. How are you?
G'day, Bruce. Pretty good, mate. Pretty good. A little hungry. I still haven't eaten dinner yet. I really got to get something into my tummy.
Yeah, well, yeah. I'm surprised you didn't plan ahead because you knew we were recording.
You have known me for how many years now, and you're surprised I didn't plan ahead?
Okay, fair enough.
Would you like to just sort of rephrase that or something, Bruce, or are you just going to leave it out there?
We'll just leave it. Swinging in the wind.
Yep, exactly. Okay. I'm a right-brain guy, mate. We don't plan too much ahead of anything, really.
Okay, fair enough. So do you write left-handed?
I was born to write left-handed, but my parents changed my mum. Yeah, when I was just a boy, in the mid-1960s, a little guy. And I was left-handed, but my mum taught me to be right-handed.
Right.
And I have a feeling that it actually has been, to some degree, an advantage, because I suppose in a right-handed world, being right-handed is easier. Mm. But I think creatively, actually, I think to some degree it has been a hindrance.
Yep.
Yeah, because I'm right-brained, most definitely.
Yeah.
But I'm also right-handed. But I was born left-handed. So, for instance, playing guitar, I have shocking hand-eye coordination.
Is that right?
Yep. Terrible hand-to-eye coordination, and always have had.
Wow.
And I am much slower on guitar than I should be. I'm much sloppier on guitar than I should be, considering the amount of time I've played it. Seriously. So I wonder whether it actually did me some, you know, creative hindrance in the process.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, otherwise, I mean, I could have been a southpaw like Jimi Hendrix.
Like
you
me.
You never know. Yeah, I might have been belting away at The Wind Cries Mary or Red House, you know, or Voodoo Child like him.
Yeah.
But then I doubt it.
I don't know where I stand because I, you know, I am left-handed. Mm. And yet, there are some things that I'm really left-brain.
Oh, really?
You know, like the whole technical side of things, you know, generally creative people are not good at the technical side of things, and yet technology is something that doesn't faze me in the least, so I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, it's actually something we're going to discuss later on, isn't it?
Oh, is it?
In our podcast. Well,
Of course, the soft and hard techniques.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
But
Before we get onto that, how was your weekend in Tassie?
Oh, fantastic. It's funny, I was there for 3 days.
Yeah.
And I spoke for 2 hours at the AIPP convention there. And spent the rest of the time driving around
taking photos.
You know, southern Tasmania. Yeah, it was fantastic. For those who are not Australian, Tasmania is our southernmost state. It's our island state.
Mm-hmm.
And it's beautiful down there. And the light is gorgeous. The light is absolutely beautiful down there. The Australian Institute of Professional Photography, or Professional Photographers, I think, what the second P stands for,
mm-hmm.
Held a convention, and they asked me to come down and do just a two-hour presentation on off-camera flash, and you can imagine how difficult that would have been.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I spend all day running a workshop on flash.
Yeah.
So I basically divided it into 2 one-hour segments. I cut my presentation down, my lecture down by half.
Right.
And then just basically took the gang down to into Salamanca Place,
yep.
which is just along the port there in Hobart.
Mm-hmm.
And we did just a couple of very quick off-camera flash techniques. But they loved the explanation that I, you know, gave them of using off-camera flash and metering manually and underexposing the ambient, etc., and showed them the results. And a lot of the photographers were very, very excited with just a few simple techniques. And I was, really gratified by that because you were always a little bit concerned when you are speaking with professional photographers, but you, I suppose, always find someone who's interested to learn something they haven't considered before.
Yeah.
And this basically was just a quick lesson in how to make, you know, something that isn't what you want it to be into something you want it to be in terms of light.
Sure.
So... it was, yeah, very successful. But the rest of the time, I photographed Salamanca Place on Saturday morning.
Yeah.
Which is big, or Salamanca the Market, markets. Which is yep. interesting. Yep. Then spent the afternoon in Richmond, which yep. has that beautiful old bridge.
Yep.
And then, stayed till last light, then went back the following morning to Richmond to photograph the bridge again and the old church and the old graveyard up there.
Yeah.
And then headed down to Port Arthur.
Yeah.
Which, is a beautiful, it's the ruins of an old penal colony what was once Van Diemen's Land or now Tasmania.
Mm-hmm.
And it really is beautiful to photograph there. The grounds are gorgeous and the ruins of the old building are just spectacular. And I must admit, last time I was in Port Arthur was 1997, I think it was.
Right.
And it was the same few days that I was down there for a convention, Australian Photographic Society convention, and Galen Rowell was speaking there.
Right.
And, as I think I might have mentioned on this podcast before, I hired a car. He needed a car.
Yeah.
So we spent a day photographing together, which a lot of people would pay a lot of money for at the time,
mm-hmm.
but I got him for nothing.
Excellent.
And, so it was fantastic. But I'll tell you what was interesting, Bruce.
Yeah.
The last time I was there, naturally, because it was 1997, I was photographing Port Arthur using film.
Yes.
And the light was not particularly great most of the time. It had its moments, it had its patches, but it wasn't particularly great. And I was shooting with transparency film.
Right.
This time, the light was beautiful. It was hard enough to give you texture and in contrast, but soft enough so that it didn't burn or blow anything out, when you were photographing the architecture, the old ruins.
Yeah.
And it was just fantastic. So I really enjoyed it this time much more than last time. Photographing it digitally and with much better light was just such a beautiful experience.
Awesome.
So, yeah, had a really great time.
Mm.
I was forced to do nothing but take photographs. It was hell on earth,
Hey, listen, while you were there, did Nigel Honey come and introduce himself to you?
Yes, he certainly did. He was actually at my lecture, so...
On your nidge. Nigel and I worked together.
Are you kidding?
No.
Oh, look, I got a very brief moment with Nigel, and I didn't really sort of get a chance to catch up with him, unfortunately. He
right.
introduced himself. And we had a quick chat, but, I had people all over me and things to do. And so I just really couldn't get much time to spend with him. But
right.
I'll have to say, Nigel, if you're listening to this, I'm sorry, mate. I didn't get a chance to spend some more time with you.
He and I worked together at Triple TFM in Hobart.
Oh.
I was production manager and he was the commercial producer.
Mm.
Yeah, so we worked together. That was, Nidge. Help me out here, mate. I'm guessing 95, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. It would have been 95.
So how old is Nigel then?
I don't know. I think he's a couple of years younger than I am.
Okay.
I don't know.
Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah.
They were really lovely, the Tasmanian bunch. Really lovely. I even made an inbreeding joke and they laughed. I told them I had to talk slowly and all that other kind of stuff.
Yep.
No, they've probably heard it all before, the Taswegians.
Yes.
So that was great. But no, it was really lovely. I've got photographs up on my blog and photographs up on my Facebook. And if you're a member of 5 Minute Photographer, I've put some up on 5 Minute Photographer as well. So if you're curious as to how we shot or how I, photographed that part of the world over the last couple of days, that's all up on the internet for everyone to see.
Fantastic.
Excellent. And you?
Me?
We've been having discussions, you and I, about you jumping ship and all sorts of things. And what have you come up with, Bruce?
I have decided that, yes, I will, when I upgrade, go to the Alpha 850. Rather than jump across to Nikon. I've had discussions with another well-known photographer whom I won't name just because I'm not sure how he'd feel about it, who has shot with the Alpha 900 doing landscape work and was very happy with it. He has, however, decided to change to Nikon, but There were reasons for that change, which I won't go into here. But essentially, his verdict was that Canon, Nikon, and Sony are all very close on a, you know, level playing field in terms of their digital SLRs. And, you know, and so we had a bit of a discussion about, you know, the fact that I have a collection of lenses, you know, from the Minolta days, which are perfectly adequate to use on a on an alpha body.
Yeah.
And while, you know, there may be strong arguments for the Nikon system, it wouldn't simply be a case of me splashing out, you know, $3,500-$4,000 on a Nikon body. I would also then have to go and replace all of my lenses and my flash.
Mm-hmm.
And so you end up, you know, I would be up for a hell of a lot more than just the cost of the body alone. Where if I stick with the Sony, then not only do I not have to replace my flash or my lenses, but I could keep the 7D as a backup body, which, you know, if I'm shooting weddings,
means
I can have a, you know, a short length lens on one body and a zoom on the, you know, or a telephoto or my 135mm prime on the other. And yeah, so it made more sense, even though I'm not about to go and do it, but it makes more sense to stay where I am for the time being.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, no,
obviously,
I agree.
Down the track, you know, if things change and I'm earning a bucket load of money from photography, then, you know, I can reassess that situation, you know, another 4 or 5 years down the track when I'm ready to change again. But
and in 4 or 5 years, who knows what the situation will be with any of them.
Exactly.
I mean, Sony are making such leaps forward. Their gear is good gear. There's no doubt about that.
Yep.
You know, the A900, spectacular camera. The A850, fantastic camera.
The thing is, there's not a lot of difference between the 850 and the 900.
No, that's true.
Other than you can save yourself, you know, $1,500 by going for the 850.
Well, what kind of glass is $1,500 going to buy for you, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I can't remember if I mentioned this on the podcast, but the only two differences were that The Alpha 900 will shoot at 5 frames per second, where the 850 will shoot at 3 frames per second.
Oh,
and
right.
To be honest, that's really not going to break my heart one way, not one
little
bit.
Well, as a landscape shooter, you need about 1 frame per hour, don't
that's
you?
Exactly right.
Yeah.
And the other was that the Alpha 900 gives you 100% viewfinder coverage of what the sensor sees, where the Alpha 850 gives you 98% viewfinder coverage.
Yeah.
And again, you know, that to me is not a deal breaker.
Mm-hmm.
So neither of those, you know, is a strong enough argument to compel me to spend the extra $1,500 on the Alpha 900.
It's a big thing jumping ship. It really is.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not necessary. It really isn't.
Yeah.
You're, you know, in your case particularly, not necessary and would really probably be quite a disadvantage. So, yeah, no, I think you're making the right choice.
Yeah.
You know. And it's good, because if ever you and I get together and shoot again, you're not going to be scunging off all my lenses, which is good.
Because you have to put up with that enough from your son as it is.
Yeah, that's right. And anyone in a workshop who's, oh, you use Nikon. Shelton, can I borrow your, can I have a look at you, how your 85, I never get to use my 85mm at a workshop.
Yeah, right.
You know, because I'm always going, whoa, have a look through this, and they all fall in love with it and go out and buy one. When I was up in Rockhampton, I might have told you this before, Mark Chapman, hello Mark, I know you're listening. He during the lunch break, you know, I did a lecture in the morning, and during the lunch break he went and bought an 85mm at Harvey Norman and came back for the afternoon shoot.
You know, if you were a smart man,
which I ain't, I am not a smart man,
you would take 10 of those lenses to your workshop.
Yeah.
You'd sell them there and then.
Yeah, a valid point. Yes, probably a valid point. Might do that. They are just a gorgeous piece of glass. But yeah, so it means that, you know, well, you'll have your own gear. And next August, when you come to a Chukapalooza,
yes,
you know, we do it all over again.
Absolutely.
You know, and or New Zealand, when you come and do that landscape shoot with us, when we do the workshop in New Zealand.
When
hello,
is
Mike
that?
Holden.
When is that?
That's a very good question.
Is that April?
No, it's later on in the year. Let me just have a quick look. I better put it in my calendar, eh? let me just have
There's
a quick
There's a website
look.
That'll probably tell you those dates, mate.
Yes, it's called creativephotoworkshops.webs.com. No, I just want to get the exact date for you. And it's April 2010. Yeah, you're right, yeah, April.
I thought so.
Yeah, okay. April 2010, New Zealand, South Island. Week-long landscape photography workshop.
Good thing somebody knows what you're doing.
Yeah, yeah, I know. I have to look at the internet to see what my schedule is. Then in May, we're going to Lake Mungo. Yes.
That would be a great trip.
Yeah.
The Lake Mungo trip would be awesome.
Yes. Lake Mungo, Broken Hill, and Silverton. That's what we're planning. Returning for the Echuca Palooza number 2, the return to Palooza, August 2010. And September, we're going to Rarotonga and the Cook Islands to do 4 days of modeling shoots and swimsuit shoots and stuff.
Awesome.
It's a tough gig, but, you know.
Somebody's got to do it. Yeah.
I know. You know, I'm so selfless, honestly. It's freaking me out. But no, it's looking really good.
Excellent.
So that's the schedule. Anybody listening on Shutters Inc. who is interested, you know, in joining us for any one of these amazing trips, let me know. We do have a lot of fun, don't we, mate?
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to this weekend.
Oh, yeah, that's right, because you're coming down, aren't you?
I am.
I'm looking forward to that. That'll
wedding,
be awesome.
Wedding workshop on Saturday.
Yes, wedding workshop this Saturday. And
which will all be in the past by the time our listeners hear this. But
yeah. And you're doing a shoot with Natasha and Glenn on Friday, is that correct?
No, Sunday morning.
Oh, Sunday morning.
Yeah.
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. I might be able to make that as well.
Oh, cool.
See how I go.
Okay.
I'll keep you posted on that, but that should be really good. But I'm looking forward to the wedding workshop. Having you there for the day, mate, that'll be fantastic. I look forward to having you coming down. We should do something Saturday night unless you've got something planned.
I have, unfortunately.
Okay, yeah, fine. Fair enough. No, who's your friend? Who's your buddy? Who's your pal? No, that's okay. Yeah, no. Oh, well, that's all right. That's okay. Now, we've got stuff to talk about, haven't we?
Absolutely.
A catch-up on Michael's email, which prompted a very sort of interesting half podcast a couple of weeks ago.
Well, last
sorry about
week,
skipping
yeah.
It. Yep. Yeah. Oh, no, last week, remember, we couldn't make it.
Oh, sorry. Yes, you're correct. Sorry, it was last episode, wasn't last week, but
Yeah, but time does fly.
Tell me about it.
You know, Now, Michael mentioned in the email that we were reading that he said one thing. I'm an engineer and not an artist. So for other people, this might be obvious, smiley face, but hard in inverted cameras,
cameras. That sounds like the kind of thing Richard Annable would do.
I was trying to do a podcast without mentioning Richard.
Oh, sorry, no, mate. Somebody had to drop the ball.
Edit that out. Put a bleep there or something. All right. Hello, Richard. I know you're listening. Now, he said this might be obvious, but hard camera techniques, the word hard in inverted commas, is very easy for me to learn. But composing an image that tells a story and similar soft, in inverted commas, parts is what I'm trying to get a grip at. And we discussed in our last podcast how that was an interesting expression, interesting way of expressing the differences, you know, between the technicalities of photography and the creativities of photography.
Yeah.
And I think it's, I'm going to use it. Michael, I'm going to rip you off, mate. I'm going to use those terms in my workshops because I think they're actually a very apt or appropriate description, don't you, Bruce?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, the hard techniques and the soft techniques. And I'm reminded of an experience that I had a few years ago, and I was photographing for the ABC, Australian Broadcasting Corporation. Corporation? Commission?
Yes,
anyway.
Corporation these days. It used to be the commission.
Ah, okay.
And
I was photographing for the ABC. They asked me to come down and photograph with the some. They were training new conductors for the Melbourne Symphony Orchestra. So my job was to stand right smack bang in the Melbourne Symphony Orchestra while they were playing in the ABC studios and photograph the composers. You know, as they the composers
conductors.
Rather than the conductors, as they were conducting the orchestra. Now, they had brought over this Italian conductor, a music maestro, master dude. He was awesome. He was a short, tubby little guy with a beard. I'll never forget him. But this man was just walking enthusiasm, walking, living, breathing passion for what he did.
Yep.
Now, he was trying to train a whole bunch of young Anglo-Saxon fellas who wanted to become conductors. Obviously, they had a love of music, but they needed to, you know, I don't know, step outside themselves a little bit or step outside the little black dots, because they would get up to conduct. And I was, remember, I'm standing right smack bang in the middle of the orchestra, listening to each different rendition of the same piece of Mozart.
Right.
And every conductor got up, and the young fellas who were starting out, especially the young Anglo-Saxon white fellas, right?
Yeah.
They would get up and they'd make the orchestra sound adequate. You know, I mean, it's Melbourne Symphony Orchestra. This is the orchestra of all orchestras that Elton John chose to do his, you know, to come out and work with.
Yeah.
They are world renowned, the Melbourne Symphony Orchestra, so they're damn good. Now, they played beautifully, I must admit, but this Italian maestro, man, was he getting frustrated, mate. He was getting so frustrated because basically these young fellas were conducting an orchestra to sound like the little black dots would sound and should sound.
Right.
But he was getting so frustrated because there was no heart coming out of these young fellas.
Right.
And so he'd get up and he would be, oh, you know, and he'd be saying, he'd be trying to, in words, convey to them what it was to conduct an orchestra. And I remember watching him, and he's gesticulating and gesturing like mad, and he's trying to explain. He said, it's like, he says, I want you to think like it's like making love in a church, you know. he was trying to paint some picture. And I was looking at one young fella and I'm thinking, well, I don't know if he's ever done either, really. Been to church or made love, you know. But he probably found that concept a little difficult to understand. But, you know, he was desperately trying to let them know that this is not about black dots. That
right.
The black dots are there, but the music is the music. So he got up and he said, look, it's all about what you exude and what you feel and what you show them about what you feel for each part of the music. And he said, I don't even have to raise my hands. And anyway, he stood there in front of the orchestra, tapped, got their attention, and gave them a signal to begin that piece of music with his eyebrows. And with nods of his face and various facial expressions, he conducted that entire orchestra without moving his hands.
Wow.
And it was brilliant. And what he was able to convey to the orchestra by using his face was incredible. I'm standing there in the middle of this, hearing the difference, feeling the difference. Then he stopped, he showed them, he told them, look, this is possible. Now I'm going to raise my hands. And he just took it to another level.
Wow.
It was an amazing experience. I couldn't believe that I was there being paid to photograph this. I learned so much about what Michael is talking about.
Yeah, right.
Because music is about black dots, right? It's about black dots on a stave. And you can play the music, follow it along, and you can get the notes pitch perfect. But there's something very human about playing an instrument. My sister was here earlier, and we were talking about how we were listening to some, we're getting the lead out, right? We're listening to some Led Zeppelin, right?
Oh, right.
She was just commenting on the way that Robert Plant interprets a note, you know, or interprets a sentence when he sings. Says, but, and then she said, but Pavarotti did the same thing in, you know, the song for Sarajevo that he did with
U2.
And she was talking about interpretation. And really, that's what it's coming down to. You can understand the technicalities of something, and a lot of people, you know, do with music. But when they pick up the instrument that they're dying to play, they just can't get a sound out of it that sounds like it's coming from the heart. A friend of mine years ago, his brother, wanted to play violin, something fierce, and he understood the technicalities of music very well. But he'd pick up this violin and he made it sound like somebody was strangling a cat.
Yeah, right.
It was disgusting. Sorry, I know he's not listening, so I'm safe.
Yeah.
But honestly, it was terrible. The thing squeaked away.
Yeah.
But he understood the hard, you know, the hard techniques, you might say, of music. Then again, I had another friend years ago, Richard, who I haven't caught up with in a long time. And Richard had no knowledge at all of the hard techniques of music. He was a great singer. He could sing, you know, everything from Art Garfunkel to Robert Plant. Just an incredible voice, this right. man, my friend. We used to play in a band together. But he would pick up my guitar and he'd say, oh, it sounds like this. And he'd just go da-da-da-da-da-da-da on my guitar and show me. And wow. he's never played guitar in his life. Then he'd pick up Scott's saxophone and he'd play that. And he'd get behind the drums and yeah. he'd play that. He was just, oh, I hated him. Right? I loved
yeah.
him too.
Yeah.
hated him. Because he could just do anything. But he was seriously limited in his ability to take that any further, to write a song, compose a song, play in the band anything that was, you know, that lasted more than a bar or two. Because yeah. he did not understand the black notes or even a chart full of chords. He didn't know the difference between a C major seventh or a G minor. He did not know, you know, music. He just knew sounds.
Yeah.
Now, what I learned from all of these experiences in music is also the same in photography. I've met photographers with incredible vision. They see something in their head and then, you know, they get frustrated because what they cannot get out of their head and into their camera and onto print or whatever it might be is simply because they have the soft, they have the creativity, but they don't have the hard. They don't understand shutter speeds, apertures, and, you know, all yeah. the rest of it. And it's that beautiful balance between the soft and the hard that makes the photographer. It makes any artist, you know. For instance, we understand that the Fibonacci mathematical rule, right?
Yep.
Is used in almost, you know, all of the universe. You find Fibonacci's mathematics everywhere,
yep.
from, you know, the spirals in a Nautilus shell through to the Orion spiral in the universe, yep. up in the heavens. We see all this mathematical formula that seems to be a fingerprint on this universe, and we can say, well, yes, that's just basically, you know, a number resulting from the addition of the previous two numbers. 1 + 1 = 2. 1 + 2 = 3. You know, 3 + 2 = 5, you know, etc. 5 + 3 = 8, and on you go. And that's the Fibonacci principle that we see in the mathematical design of our universe. Now, to understand that is one thing. And then you could go and you could draw, you know, something or whatever and be hard and fast about it. But if you don't add a human element, if you don't add your passion like this Italian composer did, you're going to have something perhaps fairly cold. You know, there's always that human element that is innate and indescribable and unique about yourself that has to come through in the photograph. It's a very interesting interplay, and you take years finding the balance between the two. You take years learning the technicalities, the hard techniques.
Yeah.
But you're inspired to do so because something inside of you, the soft part, the creative part, wants you to learn that, and it's one of those things that never stops and requires a certain level of balance, you know, between the two, between the, you know, the technicalities, the mathematics, the rules, and then the human element. And if you don't learn both, you're not going to be, well, any artist, let alone a photographer, I don't think. I don't know. What do you think, Bruce?
No, I agree. I think you do need a little bit of each. You know, you can't have one without the other and
yeah.
and be great. You can yes. be adequate, but you won't be great.
Yeah, yeah. No, exactly. I find this at workshops all the time. I get photographers coming in, some who have awesome softness.
yeah.
I think we've just coined a new phrase.
Yeah.
They have awesome softness, but they have no idea what they're doing. You know, put them behind the machine of a camera, they have no idea what they're doing. And they, you know, stick their tongue out on the left and they take a picture and it doesn't work, so they stick their tongue out on the right and they take the picture again, it's still not working, and they fumble around, you know, trying to, you know, get the picture right. I was talking about this very thing with the photographers in Tasmania because I was discussing guide numbers. And a few of them put up their hand to say that, yes, they understood guide numbers, but I got this feeling that they would never want to use them. And I said, but, you know, there you are with a client. You've got your flash off camera. You know it has a guide number of 48 or whatever it might be in meters at 100 ISO. At least you know that if it's, 6 meters away, it's going to be F8, you know. And it's a good starting point. If you just go, think it's F4, whatever, you take a picture and it doesn't work out and you move it and you take another picture and it doesn't work out, you end up looking like an idiot.
Yeah.
You know, your client, your subject, your bride and groom, whomever it might be, are going to think, oh, this person doesn't know what he's doing. He's taking 6 shots and he still hasn't got it right. So there's a practical aspect there, you know, that needs to be understood, but you've got to have the soft part already in your head. So to me, I think it starts at, well, I've got this idea for an image. And over the years of the experience you have in photography, those ideas come to fruition a lot easier than they used to. And I think that's basically the advantage of experience in both fields, both in the soft and in the hard.
Yeah.
You build a catalog of imagery in your head, and you build on that creatively, and you expand your vision as you're inspired by other photographers, as you're inspired by your own, you know, creative and visual successes, and inspired by your own growth. But if you don't grow to the same degree in some respects, especially at the outset of your photography, if you don't grow in the same degree in the hard camera techniques, you're going to get frustrated, because the images that come to your mind, you're going to be blockaded by in your lack of understanding of how to make that happen. And let's face it, Bruce, there's so many things that go into making that one image come to fruition.
Yeah.
There's the technicalities of exposure. But, you know, is it exposure that the camera would say you should, or is it an exposure that you would set according to a highlight or a shadow?
Yeah.
What is the lens dynamic that you're going to use? You're going to get in close with a wide-angle lens? Are you going to get back far with a telephoto and minimize the depth of field? What's your perspective? You know, then what's your viewpoint? Up, down, round to the left, round to the right, over, above? Then, you know, the list goes on.
Yeah.
And over the years, you gather this, you know, catalog this box of tools. And it becomes more and more automatic that you see an image and you go, yep, I need to do this, 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 and this, and bang, you make it happen. And that's a great thing. I'm starting to get that happen with me, you know, after 30 years.
I had this exact conversation with Natalie in Echuca.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Where we were talking about exactly this. And I think at the time we were talking about off-camera flash or actually just flash in general.
And it's funny you mention Natalie, Bruce, because I've just put up on Facebook that I'm recording this episode of Shutter's Inc.
Yeah.
And she's commented and said, excellent, I loved the last episode. It was very relevant to the equipment I already have and it made a lot of sense. Looking forward to this episode. Well, you've just been mentioned, Natalie. Hello, Natalie. Sorry, Bruce, so, I just had to say that.
That's all right, mate. So we were talking about flash And I made a comment to her about, you know, this idea of knowing what I wanted to achieve but not being able to get the result instinctively.
Mm-hmm.
But I said to her, because she didn't, I don't think she listens to Shutter's Inc. or she hadn't been or something, but I said to her, I'm an audio engineer. And she said, oh, okay. And I said, you know, you give me any instrument to mic, and I know exactly what microphone to reach for. I know exactly where to place it. I know exactly how much gain I'm going to need to get, you know, a decent kind of level from it. And all that stuff is second nature to me because I've been doing it for 20 years.
Yeah.
But, you know, give me a camera and a flash, mm-hmm. I'll get the shot eventually, but it's not as instinctive a process for me yet as choosing a microphone to mic an instrument or a voice or whatever, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Whereas I just, that mic here. And
yeah, and yeah. I think I said that, you know, where Shelton would just go, oh, yeah, it's this, it's that, and it's that, and it's a little boom, and the photo's done, and he walks away, you know?
No, I don't walk away. I stay and I tell you how I did it.
Yes, I know. But I mean, on a commercial shoot, you would just go, I need this, I need that, I need that, and boom, click, it's done, and you move on.
Yeah.
Where, for me, it takes a little bit longer to get to that point because it's not instinctive yet.
It's funny you should mention that. I was on a shoot a few weeks ago for a lady named Susie Ahern.
Right.
And she is a renowned sort of singer in Australia. She's a known singer. She does a lot of singing coaching for Australian Idol.
Right.
And X Factor and things like that. She's a great singer and a lovely lady. And she has a young fellow she's promoting, Bobby Andonoff.
Yeah.
And she asked me to come and do a shoot of him. And there was an image I had in my head. And do you think I could make the damn thing happen? Oh, I was just, you know. And it was, I must admit, it was really weird because I was going, nope, that's not it. And I'd take another shot, set up light, meter it. Nope, wasn't working. And I just felt like a complete idiot, you know. I mean, I must have only taken 3 or 4 minutes, but nonetheless, you know, it felt really weird not being able to go, yep, do this, hit, do this, do that, set that there, bang, and off we go. I'm so used, because I keep things pretty simple, Bruce. I'm not, you know, I'm not the sharpest tool in the shed, so I keep things pretty simple. I mean, if you look at, Joe McNally's setups for some of his off-camera flack that he talks about in Hot Shoe Diaries. Oh, let's hail Joe for a moment, shall we? G'day, Joe. You're probably not listening because you're smarter than me, but hats off to you, my friend. Some of his flash setups are wow. You know, he takes a long time to nut them out and set them up. I keep things pretty simple, especially in a commercial shoot, because they're paying for your time, and what I'm asked to do often is quite simple. So, but this shot, man, it was really bugging me, and I was starting to get really angry with myself. You know, and I think fabulous guy, so I don't get angry with myself all that often. But, you know, and so, yes, I love, but you know what, what consoled me was the fact that, nope, I still got lots to learn. I'm still going to have an adventure. I'm still going to be learning, and I'm still going to muck things up. And that actually was quite satisfying to me, I must admit, because it's good, you know, good to know.
So did you, after the event, or, I don't know, at any point, did you work out why the shot wasn't working for you?
No.
Okay.
In the end, I couldn't do it.
Wow.
I just thought, no, it's... And I just gave up on it and just went to the next one. And, you know, sometimes that happens.
Yeah, right.
Sometimes you've got a shot in your head and it's just not coming to fruition and you don't know why. And I'm sure I would speak for every Shutters Inc. listener here that you think, you know, I've got to do this shot, I've got it in my head, and for some reason, damn it, on that day, in that space, in that time, you just can't make it happen. And it's frustrating, and yet at the same time, somewhat comforting, unusually enough. You know, because I'd hate to think that everything about my photography was going to become a formula.
Yeah, you know? Right.
I was doing a shoot today, an architectural shoot for a new client, and they have a building in the city with a whole level. It's level, you know, with nobody occupying it, and they're doing a brochure for, you know, to advertise that they have this fantastic mid-city office space. And so they basically just left me alone on the floor to shoot the whole thing. And I found myself, you know, doing very formulaic, you know, 14mm wide angle shots with leading lines. And I loved them. I thought I was really happy with them. But I was following pretty much a formula all the way. And if I'd kept doing it much longer, I would have, you know, thrown myself out the window or something. And because, you know, it was starting to drive me nuts. But you got to do it. At Port Arthur, a similar thing. And yet here's the thing. I was doing similar processes, leading lines, very strong leading lines, and, you know, lines into corners and all sorts of things.
Yeah.
And yet I was thoroughly enjoying myself. You know, I used a 14mm and a 20mm lens all day.
Do you think that your frustration with the commercial shoot was because you felt guilty for falling back on a formula when you knew you were being paid to do the job, yet when you're at Port Arthur doing it for the love of it, it didn't matter?
An interesting thought. No, I think the difference was the love of the subject.
Right. Fair enough.
Yeah, no, I know that I produced images my client will be pleased with, so there was no guilt attached. And they won't know. I mean, they're not photographers, so they'll look at the pictures and go, oh, I love this, and that's great. And I'm confident that they will. I think with Port Arthur, I was there. It was awesome. I was just shooting for the love of it. And if I wanted to use the same leading lines all the same damn time, I could. And who's going to care? I'm having too much fun. I think it was about the space I was in emotionally and creatively at that time. You know, when you're shooting for a client, well, I would not choose to go up into an empty office space and photograph it as something I love. But they're paying me and, well, to do it, so I'll do it.
Yeah.
Port Arthur, old ruins, beautiful afternoon light. You know, are you kidding me? Great, great stuff. So the whole mindset is different. And I think that has a lot to do with the hard and the soft as well. If you're going to be a photographer and you want to be a damn good one, you have to have a mindset whereby you say, okay, I don't like learning about the hard stuff. I don't like having to read about shutter speeds and apertures and lens perspective and hyperfocal and depth of field and, you know, circles of confusion and all that other stuff that you might want to read about, but you're going to have to. If you really want to make the soft part come true.
Yeah,
there's a certain, you know, I know a lot of photographers come to the workshops with a loathing for the technical. And they're mostly women, and that's not because women aren't smart. It's because women are often more creative and more emotionally attached to their subject. I find, anyway, in the workshops, women are, you know, they're really driven by this desire to create beautiful images. And that overwhelms sometimes their desire to learn the hard stuff, as Michael puts it.
Right.
Not hard, difficult, but hard in inverted commas.
Yeah.
The men who come to the workshops, they're often very different. And there are exceptions to both these rules, of course. But the men often come, you know, they know it all. They got the shutter speeds, the apertures, man, they got that whole thing down pat. They know the math. They got it all down pat. And they really come to learn some of the creative techniques.
Yeah.
Now, it's not that women don't know their shutter speeds and apertures, and it's not that men aren't creative. It's just that I usually find that there's a balance more one way than the other that is almost gender specific.
Yeah, right.
That is an interesting thing I found at the workshops. There are exceptions to the rule.
Sure.
And that, you know, and where they draw that line, where each person draws that line as to their proclivities and their preferences and their greater area of knowledge or ability, that will vary too. But by and large, that is what I have found. And so depending on what gender you are, you know, you'll have to sort of say to yourself, self, I have got to do this.
Yeah.
Men perhaps become more emotionally attached to the process, be more inspired by others, be humble enough, you know, to take advice, to learn. It's, and again, an interesting thing. At my workshops, there's usually an alpha male.
Right.
Someone who comes in and he'll sit there and he's paid good money to be at my workshop and yet does not want to admit that he's got things to learn.
Yeah. Right.
It's really, then why have you come, pal? You know, I've women, you know, not that they come, you know, completely often very open to learn the technical stuff. And are already, you know, very, very creative.
Mm.
It's very interesting interplay.
There's an interesting thing with what you've said there about, you know, women tend to have the soft stuff down pat, but, you know, struggle with the hard stuff, and the guys tend to be the other way around.
Mm. Not through lack of intelligence, lack of desire, yeah.
Yeah, I also think it's partly the way each gender's brain is wired as well.
Of course, yeah.
But I actually think it's easier for the women to brush up on the hard stuff than it is for the guys to learn the soft stuff.
I would agree. I would absolutely agree.
There are so many sources of information for that, you know, the scientific side of photography Yeah, you can listen to a podcast. You can go to any one of 15 gazillion websites and read up about shutter speed and aperture and how light affects exposure and all that sort of stuff. I think that
you can go to 5minutephotographer.com and see great 5-minute tutorials on it.
Like I said, it's one of the gazillion websites you can visit. But to actually learn to view creatively, that's a much tougher ask, and I don't think it's something you can teach as easily as you can teach someone to understand shutter speed and aperture and lighting and so on.
Which is why in the digital age, I think a lot of people have been empowered, women I think particularly, and again I'm not trying to be sexist here, but it's just the truth. I think women have been seriously empowered in photography in the digital age, because the learning curve is quicker, faster, easier, and they can get
and more immediate,
and they connect to the creativity more immediately because they see it there. It's they're already creative and inspired, and the learning curve technically is very fast now. So whereas once upon a time you'd learn a technique, you'd go out and shoot it, and by the time you got your film back, you'd completely lost the technique that, you know, gotten the technique you learned. Yeah. Now it's
And there bang. Was no metadata to tell you what you'd shot.
Nope. You know, now it's learn it, shoot it, remember it. There it is.
Yeah.
You know, move on. And that is fantastic. Yeah. But it is very, like you say, it's the way women are and men are wired. And naturally there are, you know, that's not saying that men are not creative and women are not interested in the technicalities. It's not anything like that, but it's just that there are tendencies between the genders to, you know, be able to understand
to
one of them
one way or
better
the other.
Than the other.
Yeah.
You know, the ultimate balance is genderless. The ultimate balance is to try to be neither male nor female and just be, you know,
a great
beautifully
photographer.
Balanced. Yeah. Sorry, what was that?
To be a great photographer.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. So all the great photographers are basically, you know, hermaphroditic in nature, creatively speaking.
Yes.
Yes, yes, creatively speaking, and possibly some physically speaking, but, you know, I haven't met any that I know of. I think that Michael makes an excellent point here. And Michael, you've got the hard down pat and the soft. Well, Bruce makes an interesting point. You know what I'd do, Michael, if I were you? Get inspired. Look at the work of other photographers and even go out and try and copy that shot. And you'll find that you won't be able to copy it immediately or exactly, and neither should you. But you'll learn from copying that shot. You'll have another image in your image bank to be inspired to do slightly differently in different circumstances next time. Be inspired by other photographers. And the other thing is just shoot again.
Yep.
You know, because the 10,000 hours theory that I think we talked about several weeks ago really is true. Just shoot and shoot and shoot and shoot some more. And you'll find your work transforming. If you're putting your camera down for days and days on end, you know, it's not going to work for you, which is why a lot of these, you know, a lot of Flickr people have got, you know, a shot a day or, you know, 30 days of this or whatever. And they force themselves to take a picture once every day, maybe a self-portrait or something like that, force themselves. And in that moment, they can actually learn a hell of a lot. I would, if you're having a little bit of a problem with the soft stuff, Michael, why not set yourself a task like a daily self-portrait or a daily still life or something that has a theme attached to it that forces you to get your camera out every day and photograph something to make use. A, take pictures, and B, step out of your little creative circle and make that circle bigger. I think that would be a very good idea.
Yes, I think that's something I need to do as well.
Yeah?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. Well, you cycle to work every day, don't you?
Yeah. Well,
Have you thought of maybe getting a little, a nice little compact, like a, you know, a Panasonic Lumix 3 or a Canon G10 or a Ricoh GRD or something like that?
Kat's got a little Panasonic compact.
Awesome.
So,
Why not start a picture a day, on my way to work thing, and okay. you leave for work 60 seconds earlier than you otherwise would, and you find something along the way on your bike. You stop, you take a picture, and you go to work. Okay. And then that night, you upload it to Flickr or whatever you want to do. And even though it's only a compact camera, it doesn't change the fact that you still have to see, and it doesn't change the fact that you've got to make it happen. And yeah. with a compact camera, it's that little bit more work. You know?
Yeah.
Because it doesn't have all the beautiful bells and whistles of an SLR, and doesn't have the lens facilities and all the rest of it. Manual overrides aren't as easy, but... hey, I reckon it would really be a very cool lesson in seeing. And you'd be surprised, I reckon, what you see that you don't see now if you're going to look for it as you cycle to work every day.
Hmm. Okay.
Especially now that we're getting into spring and summer, you're going to have that beautiful morning and afternoon light on the way to and the way back.
Yep.
Just a thought.
Okay. Hmm.
You've got 168 hours to think about it. Maybe next week we can see whether you've decided to do it or not.
Okay. yeah, okay.
Well, maybe 167 hours.
Yeah.
Start recording at the same time next week, then. We've already done an hour, so.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Excellent. Okay, mate. Well, thank you very much for that.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you. And thanks to Michael for an interesting expression.
Yeah, definitely.
I think just beautifully describes the process. I'd love to get some feedback from listeners on this.
Definitely. Definitely. Remember, keep the emails coming in. If there's anything you would like us to discuss, email studio@audiotou.com or hit us up on Facebook or 5 Minute Photographer or anywhere else that you can find us on the web.
Stop me in the street like Mark Chapman did, you know, something like that.
audiotou.com/forum. Sign up there and leave a message there in the photographic discussions thread if you would so desire. Yeah.
Fantastic.
All right, mate. I'll look forward to seeing you on Saturday.
I'm looking forward to that very much, mate. And we'll, you know what would be interesting next week in the podcast?
Yep.
If you could, if you've got anything to say about, you know, things that you learned from the workshop, maybe that had nothing to do with anything I taught, but, you know. I'd love to get your thoughts in the podcast next week.
Okay.
On what you came up with. We've got a crazy bride. I don't know who the groom is, but we've got a crazy bride next on Saturday. So
cool.
Should be a whole lot of fun.
Excellent. All right, mate. I'll see you then.
Good on you, Bruce. Looking forward to it, mate.
See ya.
See ya.
This has been another audiotou.com podcast. For previous episodes, check out
ShuttersInkPodcast.com.
Please send questions, comments, or feedback to studio@audiotou.com.